Welcome to Waypoint Real Talk, where we discuss real estate and your home. Let's get started with your hosts, Aaron Shishilla and Austin Hines.
Everyone, and welcome to Waypoint Real Talk. My name is Aaron, and with me, I don't have Austin again. He is out in a meeting, but I do have the wonderful Crystal Brady. Crystal has been with us several times here on Waypoint Real Talk. You're always a wonderful guest to have, and the information that you bring on is so insightful. Very experienced real estate agent we have today. So,
thank you.
What are we going to be discussing today on Waypoint Real Talk?
I wanted to talk about the as-is sales contract and what buyers need to know.
Right. So the as-is sales contract, I am aware from my own experience, is very different from what you would expect with a regular contract. I know many buyers may go into a position of buying a house and thinking that the seller may have to fix items if they're not up to today's code or what they want. It might be a little bit of a safety issue even.
Sure. Yeah. So we'll get into all those specifics. The as-is contract is prevalent in our greater Tampa Bay market as being the one most commonly used. But it does vary from state to state and market to market. And a lot of folks that are coming from out of state are surprised by the process and the way we do things here. For people that are local or have bought and sold homes in the last few years, they may already be familiar with kind of how we sell homes here. We do sell them as is, and we'll talk about that today. I wanted to go through some of the conditions that are in the contract, the timelines, contingencies, and then discuss that as is component and what that means as well.
Right. So we're going to be discussing that. Can you tell me exactly like a general overview of what the as-is contract means?
Yes.
And I know you also have we have the blog portion available on our website. You have a little disclaimer that you want to put in there that you're not an attorney.
Right.
Right. So can you expand on that and then tell us like a general overview of what the as-is contract is?
Exactly. So I am a licensed realtor for Florida and not an attorney, or am I providing any legal advice? But I did want to explain the contract to you and tell you some of the common contingencies and timelines and give you an overview of it, kind of explain what some of that means. But I'm not an attorney. I'm not giving legal advice. So I just wanted to put that out there because it is a contract that's written by attorneys and it is legally binding. So it is an actual legally binding contract. And that's why it's important to know what it says in there and what you're getting yourself into as a buyer. So as far as the general overview goes, the timelines in the contract are one of the first things that I wanted to address. Timelines are very important because it is a legally binding contract and there are lots of different sections that require you as a buyer to do different things within a certain number of days. And it's important that you stay within those given timelines because, as we said, it's a legally binding contract. And if you do not complete some of these tasks within the required timelines, you could be in breach of contract and there can be consequences for you as a buyer for being in breach. This could be potentially exposing you to a lawsuit or a dispute. It could also put your earnest money at risk. So when you go under contract, you are putting down a deposit. And how you move forward with that contract will depend on what happens with that deposit. It's typically applied toward the purchase of the home. But if you're in breach of contract, not meeting the deadlines, not closing, or doing certain things, you could be putting that deposit at risk. And as a buyer, you could lose it. So that's why the timelines are so important with this contract.
Gotcha. And when we talk about some of the terms we're going to be discussing, what are like the effective dates and the important deadlines with those? And why is it so important to stick with those deadlines?
So everything starts with what we call the effective date of the contract. The effective date is a term that we use to describe when the contract begins. And then all of the timelines that we're going to discuss start from that effective date. And typically, the effective date is when the last party signed. So say the buyer signs the contract, sends it to the seller. Now the seller signs it. Both parties have now signed it. So it's now an executed legally binding contract. And it also has to be delivered back to the buyer in that situation so that everybody now has a copy. So we typically define the effective date as the date when the last one of the buyer or seller has signed and initialed and delivered the offer or final counteroffer. That's how it's defined in the contract. So once both parties sign, basically, we have an effective date at that time. And then we're going to start to move forward with all of our timelines off of that one effective date. So as far as the important timelines and contingencies and deadlines, the first one is going to be the escrow deposit that we were talking about. So we don't typically do the deposit up front. We typically do it once the seller has accepted the offer. And you're going to hear me say we don't typically, or we do typically, a lot, because I'm going to give you what a lot of the timelines are in the as-is contract that are the defaults. So defaults can be changed. The contract may be written differently when you negotiate. So for example, the deposit. Typically, you have 3 days. If that box is checked and that's the way you've gone with the sort of standard verbiage that's on the contract. Now, you may have negotiated something different, but typically it's 3 days. So within 3 days, you're going to have to deliver your escrow deposit. And that's that initial deposit after your offer is accepted. Now, there's going to be some other requirements as well, but the timelines for the as-is contract that we're talking about are computed in calendar days, not business days, for all time periods that we're going to be talking about today for this specific contract. So when I say 3 days, I don't mean 3 business days. I mean 3 calendar days is what we're talking about.
Right.
So that's an important distinction, because business days goes much further than calendar days. So we want to make sure, again, we're not in breach and we're delivering things on time. The next time-sensitive thing we have going on is the loan application. The default on the contract says that you have 5 days from the effective date to complete your formal loan application. That's something that your lender is going to take care of, but you want to make sure as a buyer that your lender's on top of it and that they're reaching out to you to start that process, because per the contract, you're supposed to do it within 5 days. The other time requirement that we see a lot that's important is the loan approval. So there's a loan approval deadline. That's going to be more for your final loan approval. So you do that initial application. You've already done a pre-qualification and a pre-approval before you even make an offer on a home, right? But now we're talking about that loan going through underwriting and you being official and getting that final loan approval. So it defaults on the contract to 30 days. A lot of times you might see that number move through negotiations. It may be a shorter period of time. For example, if we're closing within 30 days, it's usually not something that a seller would want to go that entire period. They would want loan approval quicker than the day that we close. So you need to make sure you read your contract closely and see what terms you have on there. But typically it defaults on the contract to 30 days. And that's going to basically be the major financing contingency portion of your as-is contract, is getting that loan approval within that certain amount of time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Yeah.
All right. So another critical timeline that we deal with on the as-is contract is the inspection period. On the contract, if you leave it blank and don't change it, it's going to default to 15 days, which means you would have 15 days to do your home inspection. I will tell you, in our market, it's extremely rare that through negotiations, we're going to let that go a full 15 days. We're typically seeing inspections take place in 10 days or less on the contract. Most of the time, we end up going with around a 10-day inspection period. So you probably want to check your contract, but just in your mind, know it's probably going to be around 10 days. And what that means is from that effective date we talked about, you have 10 calendar days to complete any and all home inspections that you want to do. And you need to get those inspections done during that time frame. And also, if there are any negotiations that would occur or possibly a cancellation of the contract due to the results of the inspection, you need to do that during your inspection period. So this is a very critical timeline on the contract that buyers need to be aware of and understand how that works. So as soon as we go under contract, I recommend scheduling those inspections right away. Don't wait until day 10 if it's a 10-day inspection period. You really want to do them sooner if you can, to allow time for you to review your report. Maybe you need additional inspections after the initial one, or estimates, things you need to gather to make an informed decision. You want to keep that all within your 10-day inspection period window.
What would happen if, say, for instance, you were doing an inspection, you ordered it on that first day and you had a 10-day inspection period, you get your inspection back maybe the next day to where you can actually open it up and review it,
mm-hmm.
and then you find out, hey, I need some repairs done and some re-inspections after the fact.
Right. You can continue to do that within your inspection period. So you could contact the seller, say, I need to have an estimate done or additional inspections, and contractually, you know, they need to allow you to do your due diligence. So that's perfectly okay and acceptable. You just, like I said, want to try to keep it within the 10-day window. So sometimes what will happen is, let's say, for whatever reason, you know, due to a buyer's schedule, they couldn't get out until day 8. You know, to do that inspection, and it's a 10-day inspection period. So now they need an estimate because they realize through the home inspection that they may need a new roof or some major repair. And now they want to know how much that costs to decide if they're going to move forward with this home, but they can't get someone to come do that estimate within the next 2 days. They can ask for an extension of the inspection period so that they're still protected and they have more time to finish doing their due diligence and possible negotiations that may come out of that. So some people are under the impression that, well, I did my inspection, even if it was day 10, they did it. And, you know, we're trying to negotiate with you right now, and it doesn't matter that we're on day 12. Technically, contractually, it does matter. That seller, that buyer at that point can no longer cancel based on the home inspection once they're past the inspection period time frame without putting their deposit at risk. So you want to keep everything within that inspection window, any negotiations, any inspections, any conversations, anything. And then before that window of time of that inspection period expires, you want to make sure you're comfortable moving forward. If you're not, then you need to seriously consider, am I canceling this contract? And also do that within the 10-day window or whatever your inspection period time frame is.
So then after that 10-day window or that inspection period where you have all your negotiations and you're supposed to do your due diligence,
yes,
we get into the closing date and it's pretty much you're locked in at that point.
There are some other contingencies that might still protect you in certain situations, but pertaining solely to inspections, this contract says, as a buyer, you have this period of time to decide if these inspections you did are satisfactory to you or not. It also says the seller doesn't have to do any repairs, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but that's your opportunity as a buyer to do your inspections and decide, are you okay with this house or not? If you're not okay with it, you need to cancel during that inspection period and move on. If you wait until you're outside of that inspection period, some other contingency is going to have to protect you. Now you're going to have to lose your job or no longer qualify for the loan, or some other scenario needs to happen for you to have protection under other contingencies. But that inspection one's not going to protect you anymore at that point.
Gotcha.
So we'll get into that a little bit in the next section. I want to cover the as-is component more specifically, mm-hmm. and talk a little bit more about that. But the last timeline before we get to that is the closing date. So at the time you make an offer, you are deciding upfront with that seller a closing date and what that's going to be in advance. So when you make that decision, that goes on the contract and that's on there for I'm closing on X date. So you need to meet that requirement. Your lender needs to meet that requirement. So this is why doing that loan application right away is important. Getting the inspections out of the way right away is important, because if you're closing in 30 to 45 days, you need to move the loan process forward so that the lender can close that loan on that date that we've established. If you don't close on that date, or your lender is not ready to close on that date, then you would be in breach of contract and you would need an extension. And if the seller agrees to give you an extension of the timeline, then you're okay. You're no longer in breach. We've made a new agreement. But if that seller says, no, you need 2 more days past the date, I'm not going to give it to you, you're not going to get that house. So, mm-hmm. So meeting the closing date is very critical. And it's important you keep in touch with your lender as a buyer and make sure that you're on track to meet that closing date. Some lenders make the false assumption that, oh, if we need a few more days, the seller will give it to us. They may or may not. You know, you want to make sure you stay within the terms of the contract, and time is of the essence. And it says it right in the contract that time is of the essence. And that's the reason why. If we're going to change the terms, both parties have to agree. And both parties may not always agree to change the original terms. And that could be a problem for you as a buyer. You could be putting yourself at risk. So that's why the timelines are so important. You should really lean on your real estate agent to keep you within the required timeframes and make sure that everyone's working together to stay on the same page and accomplish the goals that are in the contract.
Gotcha. Okay. So now that we covered the timelines of them. What does the as-is contract actually mean? Because I know there's some confusion. Well, do I take it literally as is? Most people consider when they purchase a house, they might be able to negotiate and say, well, I don't know if I like this, or my home inspector said X, Y, Z. The seller has to fix it. What are the limitations within an as-is contract, and why do we do an as-is contract compared to a different type of contract?
Right. So we do have an alternate version of the contract that is not as-is. It's called the CRSP, or the CRISP, sometimes we refer to it as. And it has some of those more traditional terms where their sellers are required to do repairs up to a certain repair limit. And it's more seller protective, the other contract, to be honest. This as-is contract is very buyer protective. I honestly don't know why it's so common in this market. I think sellers are a little duped into thinking, great, I can just sell as is. I don't have to do anything. And that's true. They don't. However, the buyer can also walk away for any reason at all. So it's not really locking the buyer into that contract. They can definitely change their mind during their inspection window and cleanly get out of this contract. So, but it's the prevalent one that's used in our market, which is why we're talking about it. So what it means to sell as is, if you go by the letter of the contract, is there's a section on the contract called inspections, and it has a paragraph where it's going to explain what it means. But basically what it means is, let's just say your inspection period is 10 days. It's going to say during this 10-day window, the buyer can do any and all inspections they want to do. And at the buyer's sole discretion, they can cancel this contract and get their earnest money back if they are not satisfied with the results of that inspection. So a buyer could go under contract, do the inspection, and then get cold feet, not like the color of the paint on the walls. There could literally be nothing major on that home inspection report. But because it says they can cancel at their sole discretion, they can cancel at their sole discretion. So it's kind of like they can just get out of the contract for any reason almost during that inspection window. So it's very buyer protective in that regard. Now, it also says that the seller is not obligated to renegotiate or do any repairs based on the buyer's home inspection. And if the buyer doesn't like it, they can walk away. That's their recourse, like we just talked about. But alternatively, the seller doesn't have to repair anything, agree to give any credits or money or renegotiate the price or anything like that. The contract they sign basically does say take it or leave it. And when it says as is, they're talking about the home in the condition that it's in at the time you viewed it for your showing and went under contract. So, for example, you go to view that home and let's just say the refrigerator's broken. Well, that would be kind of weird if they're living there, right? Maybe the oven's not working, or there's some major component to an appliance that's not working, or something you visually see, like you see a leak somewhere, like a hose bib leaking outside, or you know the roof is 20 years old. The seller's telling you, like, this is the way it is, and it was this way when you went under contract. Like, that oven was broken when you went under contract. I don't have to fix it. I don't have to do anything. Now, there is what's called an as-is maintenance requirement in the contract, which would be like the oven is fully functional when you do your home inspection and when you go under contract, but now 3 days before closing, the oven randomly breaks because, you know, in home ownership, things happen. Mm-hmm. The seller would be required to remedy that situation and get it back to the original condition it was in when we went under contract to purchase. So if something new happens, like I had one time, a fridge that decided to leak a week before closing, and I was representing the seller. It leaked water all over the floor and damaged the floors. Mm-hmm. It was a wood type floor.
Oh no.
So obviously the home did not have damaged flooring and a leaking refrigerator when we contracted to purchase it. It wasn't as is contract, but that isn't the way that it was when we contracted to buy it. So the seller did have to repair the refrigerator and they had to replace flooring. And they got the buyer involved to make sure because they couldn't get an exact match. And, you know, we made sure everybody was okay with that. But they had to take care of that because it was not the condition the home was in when we went under contract. Now, had it previously been broken or the floors were already damaged at the time we went under contract, different story. They don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. So does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Let's break for a minute, and then we'll come right back into it with the buyer's recourse. So give me 1 minute.
What happened?
This went off at 15 minutes.
Oh, no. Okay.
Just like our usual thing. Usually we have Austin there who could just press start again, but
So then we just have buyer's recourse and then other considerations.
Yeah, let me just look at that real quick. Oh, let me talk about this permit thing too, because that comes up a lot.
Where is that at?
It says side note right before buyer's recourse.
Okay. All right, so we're right back into it. We just had an issue there with the camera where it stopped recording. But getting back into it, it seems like the as-is contract has pros and cons to either side.
Yes.
And the buyer can really step out of it in multiple instances if they want. However, the seller isn't really obligated to fix minor items or items that they want.
Or anything,
if at all, I guess.
Right, yes.
But I know you wanted to talk for a minute about permits.
Yes.
So what in that permit section did you want to mention?
Permitting does come up from time to time. The title company does a lien search, and they also search for open permits. And sometimes that'll get flagged by the title company, and a buyer will come back and say, hey, there's open permits or expired permits on this property, and I want the seller to take care of that before I buy it. Well, it doesn't affect title, so it doesn't affect your ability to buy that home with a clean title. And the way the as-is contract is worded, it does not require sellers to close out open permits or expired permits or expend any money to do that.
What is the actual, like, if a buyer were to take ownership of a property, what does that mean for them if a permit's open?
So it's really going to depend on the municipality and the county, and if you go to pull another permit maybe in the same area, if that's going to be problematic or not. So it's kind of hard to say, to be honest. I have purchased homes with open and expired permits and not had any issues myself, but doesn't mean you may not have an issue depending on what the permitted item is for, is what I would say. So you really would have to check with the local permitting office on that. But a lot of times permits are opened by contractors who you paid to do a job and they just failed to close it out. And it could be an oversight, or they forgot to follow up with you for scheduling to have the inspector do their final inspection to close it out. Sometimes it's not always a big deal to have them close out a permit, but the way the contract's worded, the seller's not obligated to do that or expend any money to do that. They are required to cooperate and provide any information that they might have on it, but a lot of times they don't. Sometimes those permits were from the previous owner before them, even, and they have no way to track those people down or get those permits closed at this time. It's not going to affect you purchasing the home and getting a clean title, and it's not the seller's responsibility per the contract. So as a buyer, if you feel like it's a risk and you're worried about it, you might want to further investigate that as well and look into the implications of potential permitting. But I just wanted to bring it up because sometimes we're kind of far along the process and a buyer starts to get upset about it and the title company is bringing it up and the seller's not obligated to close them out under this contract. So just be aware of that. And it's pretty easy in most counties to pull permits online yourself. So a lot of times, if that's something you might be concerned about, you may want to just go online, pull the permits, and then you'll know before you even make an offer if there's open or expired permits.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of cut that one off at the pass.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. Now, what are the buyer's recourses that they're going to get into, and what are some other considerations they should look into with the as-is contract?
Yep. So buyer recourse is kind of like what we already touched on a little bit. Just you have that inspection period. You can do your inspections. If you're not satisfied with the results or you're scared by them and you want to walk away from that house, you can do it. And you need to do it during your inspection time frame to safely exit that contract and hopefully recover your deposit. That's the way it should be per the contract. Now, as far as other considerations, this is where it gets a little gray, I would say, because sellers are not obligated to do repairs, right? We know that. But if a house is older and has to pass a 4-point inspection for home insurance purposes, and there are some repairs that need to be done to accomplish that, people will often ask the seller to do those. And in many instances, the seller understands that it's necessary to keep the process moving forward. So even though contractually they are not obligated to do repairs, they understand to keep the sale moving forward, they need to. Because if you're a buyer and you're financing, which most do, then you have to have insurance as a part of your loan approval process. You have to secure insurance on that home. And if you cannot secure insurance on that home because there are some repairs that need to be done in order for it to pass a 4-point inspection, then you can't get your mortgage. And if you can't get your mortgage, you can't buy the house. Mm-hmm. So it's an obstacle the seller usually does need to remedy to keep us moving forward if they really want to sell that property. So it's not unheard of for us to go to a seller after inspections while we're still in our inspection timeframe and say, listen, we did a 4-point inspection. There's a little leak under this sink. We've got some double taps in the electrical panel, you know, or some wiring issues. Like, these things need to be remedied so we can get our 4-point clean and we can get insurance and keep moving forward. Usually a seller will say okay because they understand and take care of those items. Although technically, per the contract, they can say no and kill the whole deal. So it could happen. I have had it happen before, but only a handful of times. Usually most sellers are reasonable, want to sell the property, understand, and don't really hold their ground in that scenario. But you just have to be aware. You want to do as much research as possible. If you know that the roof is 20 years old and the house is older and needs a 4-point, it's probably not going to pass a 4-point, and that could be problematic from the beginning. So maybe you have that conversation up front before you move to far forward in the transaction and in the process and stuff. But 4-point items do need to be addressed in most cases in order to sell a home. So sellers need to be prepared for that, and buyers need to be ready to ask and negotiate that within their home inspection timeframe.
What are those 4 points that would fall under those sections to where the seller would have to or would want to fix those items?
Right. HVAC, which is your air conditioning, plumbing, electrical, and roof are the 4 points. So those are the 4 things we want to be keeping an eye out for. I usually tell people, if I know the home is older, while we're walking it, we'll start to look for those things. Hmm. Check out the electrical panel, look for exposed wiring, anything we can see before you as an inspector get there. But obviously, you guys are going to catch stuff, and it's probably going to land on your 4-point. Most homes that are 25 plus years old are going to have some 4-point items. As a realtor, I'm going to try to cover the major stuff, like, does the AC feel like it's working? Yes. Do I know the roof is newer? Yes. Okay. So hopefully we'll be good with those two. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's going to be some plumbing and electrical stuff you guys find, and then I'm going to have to go ask the seller for that. A lot of times I'll ask the seller when we're negotiating on older homes before we even sign the contract, hey, if some 4-point stuff comes up, are you understanding and are you going to address it? Just to have at least a little preliminary conversation about it. If they say, yeah, we understand, we're subject to 4-point, we'll do some minor repairs. Okay, cool. Let's go for it. And then while we're in our inspection period, let's make sure we negotiate everything and get it in writing and make sure it's all signed before the expiration of that inspection period. In case we can't come to an agreement, then we might need to walk as a buyer, and we want to make sure we do it while the buyer is still protected, staying within those important timelines.
Awesome. Well, I think I know we have another article in our website that actually explains the common contingencies with as-is contracts. So if they have any other questions, they can definitely go on there. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention within this actual podcast we have?
I think that pretty much covers it. Yeah, the as-is contract, definitely read what you sign, I think, is the other thing that I would like to leave people with. A lot of times as a real estate agent, we're negotiating, and I will send people the contract to sign electronically, and I'll say to them, I'll tell them some of the highlights, like what we talked about today in this podcast. And I'll say, if you have any other questions, please call me. I know it's boring to read it, but it is legally binding. So it's really important that you understand what you're signing. I can't tell you how many times I send a contract offer signature and it comes back to me within 60 seconds already signed. I know that they didn't read it. And I could have made a mistake. I could have done a typo. Mm-hmm. I could have missed something. You know, we are human, the people preparing these contracts. So just at least confirm the stuff that's been filled in is correct. At least read the main points of it. Understand those important and critical timelines that we've discussed today, and know what you're signing. Because once you sign and you give your deposit, the timeline is on, and your deposit could be at risk if you don't follow through with the commitment you've made to this legally binding contract.
That's a very good point. I think we always kind of get mixed up with just signing something because other people have done it so many times that we don't need to worry about it.
Right. And there's that excitement of, I'm trying to get this offer in quickly, and I really want to buy this house and all of that. So, I mean, at least if you watch this podcast first, you'll kind of know what the contract has to say, right? But definitely at least take a few minutes to go through the highlights.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Crystal. You're always a joy to have on here.
Thank you
so
for
insightful,
having me.
So much information. If you have any other questions, be sure to comment down below. You can also comment on our website. You can also go to TampaBayBrady.com, mm-hmm. right, to ask you questions if you have any. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming on.